I'm going to be speaking from the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Continuing it was kind of ironical that Ray left off in America. Go back. I decided this year that I want to see if I can consecutively go through the whole second canto. So I started chapter one. And by the time I left the United States, it was part of the way through chapter two. And by the time I reached Mayapur, they were on the same chapter. Exactly in the same place where I left off. And so I'll just continue from there. A little background. It's always nice to understand things within a context. Just like Bhagavad Gita, we want to understand the message of Bhagavad Gita as part of a whole conversation where step by step Krishna is unfolding the absolute truth, the means of achieving spiritual perfection, and what that spiritual perfection is. So Bhagavad Gita has to be understood in its broader context. Same Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a dialogue. Suta Goswami is explaining what he heard from Sukadeva Goswami. So the whole first canto is setting the scene for Sukadeva Goswami to appear. Philosophically, and so forth, that the main messages of Srimad Bhagavatam are laid out. That which Sukadeva Goswami is going to explain has been summarized in a number of very brilliant ways. The first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are described in Padma Purana as the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation. As Krishna disappeared at the end of Dwarapa Yuga, at the beginning of Kali Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam appeared. It's likened to the setting of the sun and the end of the day. The night time comes, the night of Kali Yuga comes. And very early in Kali Yuga, the full moon, as brilliant as the sun, Srimad Bhagavatam, made its appearance. The literary form of the Supreme Lord. Krishna himself, in such a convenient form, you can hold him in your hand. And you can associate with him through sound vibration. Because in this age of Kali, this hearing of the holy name of Krishna, and a subset of that is hearing of his form, qualities, and activities, and pastimes, and wonderful loving exchanges with his devotees. All these things are within the Srimad Bhagavatam because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is none different than his loving associates. And the exchanges that he has with them give indication of his wonderful loving qualities. In other words, we come to understand about Krishna by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and the first two cantos are approaching his lotus feet. What does it mean to approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord? Is it just poetic imagery that really doesn't mean anything? What does it mean to approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord? We always hear the lotus feet. What does that mean? The eligibility for approaching the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, or when one has achieved that, means that one has achieved the standard of humility. In a mood of service to the Supreme Lord, like the emblem of servitorship is Hanuman. He's standing there, or kneeling, with his eyes fixed upon the lotus feet of Ram, waiting to hear a word that Ram wants something. And then, there goes Hanuman to take care of whatever it is that Ram wants. Approaching the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord means the mood of humble service. One has understood who the Supreme Lord is, and one can do so in the mood of service, or through the medium of service. The medium of service takes away the platform of speculative knowledge. We can try to set aside speculative knowledge, or the tendency to understand things conceptually. But we work that way all the time. The medium of devotional service provides, it takes one beyond the limitation of conceptualizing the Supreme Lord. It's experiencing the Supreme Lord. It's experiencing his personality and his loving qualities, and its magnanimity and compassion and his love through the medium of service. So approaching the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one who has attained shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord has such a mood of service. When Sita was missing, one place in Ramayana, Lakshman is asked to describe, please describe what she looks like, so we can say if we've seen her or not. He said, I have no idea what she looks like. I've only seen her lotus feet. I can describe her lotus feet to you. A humble mood of service. So that's what the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam bring one to. If you become absorbed in the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, that will be your consciousness. That will be your reward. So, rather than do what would be a very nice thing to do, a whole overview of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll just go to the end of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the final chapter, which precedes the second canto. Shukadeva Goswami makes his entry. There's several chapters where the glories of Maharaj Parikshit are described, correct? Many chapters, from his birth the horoscope that Yudhisthira Maharaj had arranged, the description of his mature stage as a king, his being saved from the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama, how dear he was to the personality of Godhead, even before he did anything. How special. Is checking the influence of the personality. Glories and glories and glories and glories and glories of Maharaj Parikshit. And then the apparent mistake or offense of Maharaj Parikshit. And repeatedly, Prabhupada explains it was the design of the Supreme Lord. We should not. It's a classic of Sudaracharo Bhajate Mama Nanyabak. We should understand Sador Eva Samantavya. That Maharaj Parikshit is a pure devotee of the Lord, being induced by his master, Krishna, to do what he did, so that he could then do the next thing that he did. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So the perfect recipient of Srimad Bhagavatam combined with the perfect speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami, and receiving Shukadeva Goswami, one of the first canto themes, in order to approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one has to understand how to properly receive a sadhu. Receiving a sadhu is a theme in the first canto. Again and again and again. What does it mean to do that? Not only what is the protocol, what is the disposition of heart that must be there in order to open one's heart to receive that which the sadhu has come to give? And then what is the message of the sadhu? Again and again and again, the essence of that is presented, just like when Vidura comes back after being gone for so long. He's received by Maharaj Parikshit, and then he delivers his message. He delivers his message to the assembly, and he specifically targets Dhritarashtra. What's the message of the sadhu? Don't be attached to the material world. Be attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How many times have we heard such a message? And how attached we are to the material world. The message. Then the practical application. Something less than an A. B, C, D, maybe F. Application. So it's not. This message of Srimad Bhagavatam is not information, it's transformation of consciousness. Information, 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 no transformation. It's not, there's information, but it's way beyond information. If one has properly understood the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, then you've captured the message is one of transformation of consciousness, and then the submission to Shukadeva Goswami by the most qualified hearer of that message, and then what comes is the question, the end of the first canto. There's two questions. Because Maharaj Parikshit is a king, he's thinking compassionately about others, those who are his citizens, those who are in his care. That's his first question. What is the duty of people in general? What should they do to perfect their lives? The second question is, what about amongst all of those persons, the subcategory of those that are about to die? Is there something special that one should do when you know that you're about to die? And the other 11 cantos are an answer to that question. Or the next three chapters, or the first three chapters of the second canto, address that question. In one sense, these first three chapters of Canto 2 complete the Srimad Bhagavatam. But in Chapter 4, Maharaj Parikshit, being the expert milkman, he asks more questions. Can you please expand your answers? And this, that. It leads to a whole several more cantos because he's been inquisitive. And please note, whether you write it down or just mark it in the front of your forehead like Tilak, that inquisitiveness is an essential characteristic of a good listener. It's not just information, it's transformation. And when there's a desire to transform consciousness, inquisitiveness is naturally there. It's not just, oh, I'd like more information about this or that. Hearing the glories of Krishna itself is transforming if one hears in proper consciousness. So many of the things he asks are about Krishna. Anyway, so in answer to those two questions, what is the duty of people in general, and particularly what is the duty of one who is about to die, the second canto opens. And in that first chapter of the second canto, there's a prelude and two main parts. The prelude is da 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 da. Srimad Bhagavatam is going to be spoken. It is so it's the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the first section. And then Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak. And he speaks two messages: detachment and forming a spiritual conception, forming a conception of God. The title of the chapter is The First Step in God Realization. So you have to begin somewhere, right? Just step. First step, detachment. Towards attachment to God, to the Supreme. Supposing you don't have any conception of the Supreme. Well, then you need to begin forming a conception of the Supreme. And in this first chapter of the second canto, the Virat Rupa, or seeing God within nature, is that first step. Culturally, here in India, there's an overload of too many conceptions of God. But there are some places where it's very scarce. I'll share a little experience with you. I was visiting at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. Some of you know some of the devotees that are residing there. And the way that it works in America is, well, one of the things one can do is at a university campus, you arrange for a room at the student center, and then you put up posters around campus letting the students know there's going to be a talk on this subject. So this particular occasion we chose Journey of the Soul. Very general. Journey of the Soul. And a lot of people came. And amongst those lot of people, surprisingly, a lot of Oriental people came, because they don't usually come to these kinds of programs. But there was a good representation. And out of all the students that had attended, one was particularly very attentive, and at the end, after questions and answers were over, she came forward and I'll just summarize basically the message that she presented. May I share with you something personal? I said, sure. I'm from China. And in China, there are many good people. And they do many good things to help one another. It's very nice. But there's no conception of God. And I came to America to do graduate studies, research. And when I came here to America, I found there's so many conceptions of God. I felt like a little child in a candy store for the first time. And there's all this candy everywhere. Then she had a shoulder bag. She patted her shoulder back and said, in here there's a Bible. Because in my lab, there are a number of Christians. And I shared with them, I'm very interested in conceptions of God. And so they invited me to their Bible study group. She went like this and said, but it's not satisfying. I came to this program because I saw the advertisement and I thought, this is something with Eastern religion. So I wanted to find out. I didn't ask her, she just, you know, volunteering all this. Then she paused and said, I know what the happiness of a research worker is. And then she described, happiness of a research worker is, da 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 da. But there's another kind of happiness. I see that happiness in you and the other people who are here with you, and I want to experience that happiness. Wow. Said, okay. Here's a Bhagavad Gita. You take it home and just promise me that you'll read it. And then over a course of time, we can discuss what the message of Bhagavad Gita is. So at least you can have a conception of God as found in Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita. So the idea is then there a first step in God realization is not just to be good, but to have a conception of a personal conception of God. So the first canto takes one through the steps of detachment. This means not just detachment of conceptions, but detachment in the literal sense of vairagya. Accepting a sense of happiness not in terms of varieties or grades of sense objects for your senses to come in contact with. And happiness means having a nice set of sense objects for your senses to come in contact with. Detachment from that illusion. Our one great statesman in America, Abraham Lincoln, in a very noble, statesmanlike way, declared that this is during the beginning of abolishing slavery and the civil rights movement. Our Creator has endowed everyone with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Like, you know, the soul has free will. The soul is animate, life. There's liberty, there's freedom. And what freedom for what? Sense gratification. Sounds very profound. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Inalienable rights. But in a society that doesn't have a very clear and proper spiritual conception, that's alienation of our spiritual right. It takes away from our spiritual right, our right to have a relationship with God. It takes away. It's the misuse of that free will. As long as one is holding the conception that happiness means sense gratification, and sense gratification is the whole range of things, subtle and gross. So one has to have a spiritual conception or a personal conception of God. So seeing God within nature is in that first chapter. So now we're in chapter 2. Chapter 2 has two main parts. Detachment. There's a reason there's consistency, because without detachment, you can't have attachment to the Supreme. If I'm holding on to something, I can't grab another something. I have to let go of that something so I can take the other something. As long as we're holding on to the expectation that happiness is defined in terms of the objects that my senses come in contact with, that's happiness. As long as one holds on to that conception, one will not be able to have a spiritual conception of life, of God, of myself, of relationships, of happiness, of reality, of contentment, of peace, of the things that I should live my life by. You, long as you're holding on tightly. So detachment. And moving from seeing God within nature is to see God within the heart. That's the second step. And those first steps and second step, it's all part of the ultimate step. Or the third chapter is pure devotional service, change in heart. But it's a step. And so the process, along with detachment, there is a description of the process of meditation upon the super soul. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, he was given this process of meditation, correct? By Narada. Of course, it was Satya Yuga, and that's the process in Satya Yuga, is meditation. But here, this is the end of Dwarapa Yuga, the beginning of Kali Yuga, and still he's describing the process of meditation. Because in principle, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord is necessary. And people may do meditation, even in Kali Yuga, without understanding what the meditation upon what is. And even for what purpose meditation upon what? Just meditation. Like anesthetizing the infection by putting on antiseptic. because it hurts. Material life in Kali Yuga hurts, so put on some antiseptic. Just try to be neutral. Be peaceful until you stop your meditation and have to go back into the infection, contamination area. You don't stay disinfected, you become again infected. Unless the purpose behind it is understood. The purpose behind fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. What is that purpose? It's approaching the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. It's coming to the mood of humble, loving service in whatever it is that you do. This is the Bhagavatam's message. It's our medicine. It's our healthy state of consciousness. It's our happy state of consciousness. But the meditation upon Super Soul is described. And it even goes all the way to the different chakras and what those energy centers are, and fixing life air in the abdomen, then in the chest, then in the heart, then in the throat, then in the palate, then between the eyebrows, and then to the Brahmarandra. And then mechanically, literally the word is used, force, the yogi can puncture with the life air, direct the soul to achieve the spiritual destination, and only if there is detachment will that be successful. Because if there's attachment, then it's a sightseeing program. Meaning the soul can journey from the body, but if there is desire for anything within this created realm, even just to check it out, I wonder what that's like. The curiosity. Like sightseeing. A devotee is devoid of that. In the verse that we're going to be discussing, I didn't even get there yet, but the verse will explain that a devotee is free from that interest. I would like to experience this sense gratification. I would like to experience what it is like in that place. I'd like to experience what it's like in that place. I wonder what it would be like to have this opulence. I wonder what it would be like to have this mystic city. And as soon as you open the door for material desire, it's not that one material desire comes and stands in the middle of the floor. There's a whole assembly, a whole host of things. And behind them, a battalion of desires. So this is why the Vedas are not just for information, but for transformation of consciousness. I'm going to read the translation for text 22. O King, if a yogi maintains a desire for improved material enjoyments, I'll go back one more. Text 21. Therefore, the bhakti yogi should push the life air up between the eyebrows, and then, blocking the seven outlets of life air, he should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, if he should then reach the cerebral hole and give up his material connections, having gone to the Supreme. So this is the mechanical method. And devotees are interested in the ultimate attainment, and some persons that don't know, don't have that ultimate attainment purpose. The next verse. However, O King, if a yogi maintains a desire for improvement in material enjoyments, like transference to the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, or achievement of the eightfold perfections, or travel in outer space with the Vaihayasas, or situation in one of the millions of planets, then he has to take away with him the materially molded mind and senses. In the third canto, where Lord Kapila Dev explains the process of devotional service to Devahuti, he says, it is only by the process of bhakti yoga that the material mind is dissolved. No more material mind. That's nice. No more material mind. What a relief. Conversely, as long as one maintains a desire, there has to be a reposing place for that desire. What is that reposing place? Mind. The mind carries different conceptions of life, just like the air carries aromas. Desire and hate, because where you have one, you have the other. Now, we want desire without hate. That's called peace, right? I want to fulfill all my desires. But as soon as you enter into that territory, you've entered into the territory of duality. There's going to be hate, there's going to be strife, because something's going to interfere with what I desire. It's a trap. I hope you see it. So the position of desirelessness is the spiritualization of desire, because you can't just put desire to sleep, because it's going to wake up. You have to dissolve it. Material desire. And so that's the dissolving agent is spiritual desire, the desire to achieve the lotus feet of Krishna. In everything that you do, it doesn't mean you put your career to sleep, you put family life to sleep, just relationships become zero, your intelligence becomes zero, everything just goes into anesthetized state. That's not the message of Krishna consciousness. That's not the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And people aren't prepared to go there anyways. What they were prepared to do is they want their desires fulfilled and they want to do without the hate. It's not going to happen. As soon as you have one, you have the other. It's duality. And as long as the one is there, then there'll be repeated birth and death. And all of that nice yoga method goes right down the drain. Yes, one can go to some other place. And yes, one can achieve mystic cities. But this is, and all the other extraordinary things, beyond the ordinary things of life. But they're all material. And that's what the purport explains. In Nectar of Devotion, many of you have read Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada very carefully spells out that each of the eight mystic cities, they're material, they're the same aspirations that non-spiritual materialists want. Only they want by mechanical means, and the yogi wants by subtle material means. to become as light as a feather, anima, siddhi. The scientists have their program for practicing weightlessness. They go bouncing around inside this weightless machine so they can prepare themselves to go into space travel where it's weightlessness. Or that laghima siddhi or mahima siddhi, become heavier than the heaviest, just like Dhruva did by his toe pressing into the ground, one toe, because one foot was up off the ground, just one foot on the ground, and his big toe was pressing the ground down like the weight of the Supreme Lord. It was a mystic power. Anima siddhi, mahima siddhi, laghima siddhi, prapti siddhi, to acquire something from a distant place. So become very, very, very tiny in size. Anima. The followers of the Alvar that helped to rebuild the Sri Rangam temple, one of them had this capacity, and so he could enter into people's homes by just going through the hole in the door where the key goes, because he had this siddhi. He could enter, then again manifest his natural form, unlock the door, and let the other thieves come in. Prakamya siddhi. That's a good one. You can create anything you like, up to a planet. Now, Lord Brahma creates planets, but how does Brahma create planets? He does it through mystic power, and one can get a mini Lord Brahma mystic power, Prakamya siddhi. You can create something, anything wonderful you like. Are not the materialists trying to do all of these things? Space stations that float in space, and if, you know, as they advance in their technology, something so big it's like a planet people can live on. And so be able to do that by mystic power, create a place, or destroy a place. They're certainly trying to destroy places. The ability to change shapes. When they get their system of cloning down, they'll figure out how to make whatever, different shapes. Kamayavasita siddhi. So, Prabhupada writes, all of these expediencies are common, as common as natural gifts for the inhabitants of those of higher planets. As common as natural gifts. What are some of the natural gifts that we have? We have water, we have air, there are fruits and flowers, and cotton cloth, and, you know, there's natural gifts. The ability to speak and the ability to walk, and we have just gifts that are given by nature. Ability to think. They're natural gifts. And the higher planets, these mystic cities, they're as natural as what we have here as natural. And that means everyone can, they can travel freely without spacecraft, without crash landings, without hijacking of airplanes. They just, at will, because they have this capacity. So on this plane, in the Earth planet, achieving that seems very, very attractive for the materialist. And for those who are subtle materialists, achieving them without gross expenditure and ugra karma labor to do them by subtle means. That also seems attractive, but it's material. The foolish, innocent person may think, oh, one who can do like that is God. Persons are fascinated by technology. I remember years ago when I first started coming to India, whenever I would sit someplace in a public place, within 5 minutes there was a crowd of people staring. And they weren't just staring at me, that, you know, that here's a white body person. But I noticed they were staring at my watch. And now it's a computer. You know, sit in a public place, and I was waiting for the train to come here, and, you know, people were wanting to look at the screen on the computer. Oh, look at that. Fascinated by technology. It's just processing things in X way instead of Z way. It's the same thing. Writing a letter. You can write a letter this way, you can write a letter that way. And store it in your memory, or send it in an envelope. It's the same thing. The people are fascinated by technology. And someone that can give them technology, oh, that's advancement. Isn't it? It's not advancement. It's the same thing. So a devotee can use those things, but we're not attracted to those things. For purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness, we may travel all over the place, but it's not to satisfy curiosity. Oh, I wonder what this place is like. I wonder what that place is like. My sister, one of my sisters, who's little more attracted to Krishna consciousness than the rest of my family, met somebody that knew a Bhrigu reader somewhere in Lucknow. And she was real excited. She said, here's the address. And they told me if you go there, it's so rare that somebody get this information, that if you go there, chances are they'll have an idea of, a precise idea of who you were in the past 100 lifetimes. I said, thanks, but no thanks. He said, what? You're not interested? I can't understand. You're so many people in the world don't even have an idea of reincarnation, and you have, it's fundamental to your religious view is reincarnation. Aren't you interested? No. I said, just like we have a family album, and in the family album there's pictures of you and me when we were little babies, and so what? You know, it's just a curiosity item, last lifetime, 100 lifetimes, 50 lifetimes. It's just like sightseeing, supposing go in the future. Take my camera and go to someplace. I'm not interested sightseeing. Because you have a desire like that, it means you'll take birth and have to undergo such experiences again and again and again and again and again. Not interested. I said, someday you'll understand. But I'm, you know, thank you for this offer, but. So the message that we're getting here in the Bhagavatam is, as long as there is such a desire, one has not experienced the requisite transformation. Or another way that Prabhupada says is that all the cities mentioned above are features of domination over the world. The devotees of the Lord are not ambitious to dominate a false temporary phenomena. Dominate Ishwara, the controller. Along with the controller is the enjoyer. And the devotees understand, where does this enjoying spirit lead to? It leads to duality. Along with desire is hate. It leads to the things we don't want in pursuit of what you want. It's a trick. It's Maya. I hope you understand the message here. Spiritual life is not just a technique, the technique of chanting the Maha Mantra. It's not just a mechanical thing that we're supposed to do every day because that makes you good. Krishna consciousness is not just a series of behaviors. You do this and avoid, do the do's and avoid the don'ts, and you're Krishna conscious. It's not a mechanical process. It's a transforming process. Transformation of consciousness. Letting go of the material notion of being the dominator, being the controller, being the enjoyer and proprietor of different resources. Happiness is not that. That's material suffering. Fixing the mind upon Paramatma is not just chilling out the fever of material existence, becoming shanti, shanti, shantihi. It's not a state of neutrality. Krishna consciousness is a state of dedication to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. That's the message of the second canto. Here Prabhupada gives a definition of spiritual as opposed to material. A desire to serve the Lord, the supreme predominator, is spiritual or transcendental. Achieving the lotus feet of the supreme Lord means coming to that spiritual position. There has to be detachment from the material position in order to come to the spiritual position. You have to let go of that disposition, the spirit of being the enjoyer of temporary facilities, being the dominator, even just checking it out. So much of what happens in India today, it may not be amongst our devotee community, but it surrounds us, and so we're influenced by it to a degree to imitate the West. I've got to have one. It's called marketing, to inspire the people that don't have to feel happiness is to have. It's called marketing. So many things that people don't need. Advertising and marketing is to create a desire in people that don't need something to feel they need something. So then they'll work hard to get that something. It's good for the gross national product, the people to have material desires. Economic advancement is tying the knot to illusion stronger and stronger and stronger. Krishna consciousness is not good for the gross national product of any nation or group of people. It's very good for emancipation of the soul. It's not very good for the gross national product. We're not big consumers, because we haven't bought into the idea that so many things are necessary to bring happiness to the soul. Things that are necessary, they're necessary. And we accept them as gifts from God, and we offer them back to God. a desire to serve the Lord, the Supreme Padamanator, is spiritual or transcendental. And one has to attain this purification of mind and senses to get admission into the spiritual kingdom. So there's the yogi. He's perfected. I mean, we don't have this capacity to perfect the yogic system whereby we can move the soul through the control of the life airs, the different chakras of the spine up to the Brahmarandra and poof. We don't have that mechanical technique capacity. We're not instructed to try to do it either. But we are instructed to achieve what the purpose of that is for. That is attachment to the Supreme. Concomitant with that is detachment from illusion. With the materialistic mind, one can reach the planet, the best planet of this universe, but no one can enter into the kingdom of God. Senses are called spiritually purified when they are not involved in sense gratification. Again, the theme of detachment. But try for detachment without attachment to the Supreme. You won't get very far. Krishna doesn't even recommend trying to do it. Vishaya vinivartante niraharsha dehinam. It's a pretense. It's false. Good try. But it doesn't work without attachment to the Supreme. Rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtvandavartate. So we're meant to, in devotional service, through devotional service, purify the senses, purify the mind, and the purity is not just doing certain things and avoiding certain things. The purity is submission to the Supreme. Do this way and not that way with the submission of making an offering of your life to Krishna. And by the cultivation of that consciousness behind the acts of Krishna consciousness, purification of the mind and senses will be there. And then when the senses come in contact with the object of sense, it's seen as simply an opportunity to serve Krishna. Family life, occupational life, social life, even worship and prayer are spiritual life. Persons that don't have a sense of devotional service, it's a way of social bonding and satisfying, in so many ways, satisfying material desires, including elevated material desires. Let us go to a higher place where enjoyment will be much better. Materialists have the same idea. And religionists have the same idea. Although one may be in passion and the other may be in goodness. Goodness is not good enough. It's bondage. Devotion in with purified senses and purified mind that come about by submission to the Supreme. That's what's wanted. So this naturally leads to the next chapter, the pure devotional service, change in heart. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow. Any discussion? Yes.
As for this description, the yogi who successfully takes the life air to the Brahmarandra and manages to go back to Godhead, he also goes to Godhead. Now, how does he develop transcendental qualities? Because the whole process is mechanical.
Well, the verse says, the bhakti yogi, which implies that there is training in devotion, just like Grandfather Bhishma. He knew this process. Dhritarashtra, he knew this process. The saintly kings, they knew this process. It's part of their training. Now, one can use this training for material or spiritual purpose. If there isn't a spiritual teacher, one isn't going to get the spiritual purpose. If there's a spiritual teacher, there's no way that one's going to not get the spiritual purpose, the purpose of devotion. So Grandfather Bhishma, certainly he was serving the personality of Godhead. And Dhritarashtra was too attached, and so he didn't serve the personality of Godhead. And so he didn't go back to Godhead. But he was rescued from the hellish reactions that he would have had to undergo for all of his misdeeds due to attachment. So the answer is, this mystic yoga process can also be performed by devotees, or those who have an understanding of devotion. My purpose is to go to the kingdom of God to serve the Supreme Lord. And if that isn't one's consciousness, that will not be one's destination. In fact, one will still have some desire. And the unsuccessful yogi will go to that place where that desire can be fulfilled. So we're getting some understanding of the process, but we're also richly getting the understanding of devotion. And therefore we don't take shelter of this process, at least in this age, because there's another process that's being prescribed. Anything else? Take the microphone.
If suppose we like to see many temples or going to the places of seeing pastime places, etc. So there also there could be some component of sightseeing desire like that. So how to overcome that?
What's the question?
Question is that, you know, we go for yatra.
I got that. What's the question?
So how to overcome that?
How to overcome that? The answer to how to overcome that is within Prabhupada's instructions. When you go to a sacred place, you should inquire from the saintly persons. That's how to overcome that. The place itself is purifying. And so to a degree, the curiosity / sightseeing propensity, as well as whatever other material propensities, will also be diminished or cleansed. But then you have to put something else in its place. That's where the spiritual conception comes, by associating with saintly persons, inquiring and hearing and serving. So then the genuine thing replaces the sightseeing thing.
Maharaj, you were describing the how the material desires, they come like a battalion and they enter so much of the time. So as devotees, when we develop our attachment to Guru and Krishna, it is described that these desires will go away. But in our practice of Krishna consciousness, we deal with both. There are these desires, and as well also there is the some desire to develop our attachment for Guru and Krishna. Now, what is the, and we are very insignificant, very small. Sometimes these attachments are far more overpowering. Material energy is very overpowering. How does the devotee balance? What is his responsibility towards? Can he just depend on Krishna? Where is the dependent? How do we strike a line between false dependence and actually doing our due, fulfilling our responsibility? Saying I am dependent on Krishna, Krishna will take care of this, is one thing. Another is the devotee doing the needful to address those conditions of heart. I don't know whether I have expressed myself.
It's a little confusing. I get the general idea of what you're asking. How much is it, do we depend upon Krishna to address this tangle of material complexity, versus on the other side, how much do we take it upon ourselves to strive to remove this tangle of material complexity?
Yes.
That's your question. The answer that our acharyas supply is that we must do both. It's not one to the exclusion of the other. It's not a binary function. It's either one or the other. But our primary, the Svarup Lakshana, the primary characteristic that must be core or central to our devotional life, is Krishna Eka Sharana. That's first. And the others follow behind that one. And right behind the one, the Krishna Eka Sharana, is Guru Padashraya, in Rupa Goswami's language, or Acharya Upasana, in Bhagavad Gita language. So, because there's the shelter, we then, following behind, I want to please Krishna, comes, in order to please Krishna, I have to come before Krishna with qualities that will please Him. And therefore, I want to cultivate these qualities. If the Krishna Eka Sharana, or Mai Chanan Yoyogena Bhaktir Avya Bicharini, if that's not in place, then a prideful purpose will be there. I want to be recognized as a person who is humble. I want to be recognized as a person who is religious, or it's who is knowledgeable in the scripture, who is, you know, a saintly person. So, both must be there, one follows the other. Submission. Or say the same thing in a slightly different way. A motivation in the mode of goodness is, I want purity. But for what purpose do I want purity? So that Krishna will be pleased. So it's for some persons, it's a giant step forward to wish purity in their life, because they're involved with so many impure things. It's a step up. One of the problems with I want purity is for material aggrandizement purposes. So then, one one who is caught in that complexity can take the next step. Krishna should be pleased. So you can just take that step. Krishna should be pleased. Right at the very beginning. Krishna should be pleased by my existence. I want that Krishna will be pleased by my existence. And then, following behind that commitment, that objective of life, comes the next thing. The complexity of material life that I'm involved with is not very pleasing. So let me, but I can't on my own. I'm depending upon Krishna. Then it becomes spiritual. A desire to serve the Lord, the Supreme Predominator, is spiritual or transcendental. Okay, I want to please the Supreme Lord. Okay, to do that one has to attain purification of the mind and senses. Okay, that's my assignment in service. Okay, one follows the other, both are required. Yes? Microphone?
Maharaj, in the service that we are given, many times we get carried away by, because even a devotee, when he does services, he also gets the some sort of a mystic power to do things beyond his capacity.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, exactly.
So he becomes, I become very attached to this.
No. Never. This is the fork in the road. For the devotee, this is the exchange of loving reciprocation between Krishna and the devotee. For the mixed, impure, motivated soul, this is another opportunity for enjoyment. I'm not the predominator. I'm the predominated. This is Krishna's mercy. I'll share with you two examples. Just came in the course of the train ride and responding to so many of the correspondence I haven't been able to do because of so many things, GBC meeting especially. So one person was writing, there's resistance in my heart to the mood of service. And I know that, and therefore when you give me service, I'm reluctant to do it because I know that what my enjoying propensity is. But I've just looked at the correspondence that I've written to other people, that is the service that you've given to me to guide other people in Krishna consciousness, and reading those letters, it's not my message, it's not even my voice, it's some other message, some other voice. That's all the lessons that you've imparted in the mood that you've imparted them, that's what's being expressed. And then I received these letters back saying thank you for all the help that you're giving. So through the medium of service, the devotee is realizing, I'm being empowered beyond my capacity. And conversely, whenever I'm not in that mood, I simply become impatient and disturbed and angry and harsh. And I don't like it, and other people don't like it. This is a mystical process. Then another person, worshipping their deity. Same message. I'm not attracted so much, you know, to be honest, I'm not so attracted to deity worship. But when I find, when I do this process of worship in the mood that this is on behalf of my spiritual master, I'm not the enjoyer, it's a service. It's so joyful. And then my mind wants to run to the joyfulness of it, and I lose the sense of I'm doing it as a service to my spiritual master. And all of that happiness is gone. I become the enjoyer. There's the message of devotional service is in the Bhagavatam. It's realized through the medium of service and submission. When we serve in submission, we taste something that just is not there in the controller mentality. So if something comes that empowers us beyond our capacity, all credit goes to someone else, if the heart is pure. Ah, but if the heart is not pure, then I want to be the enjoyer of that something, and then I lose it. I lose the happiness, I lose the empowerment. So this is, according to the teaching of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this is one of the stages of anarta nivritti. One who is a little bit successful, in your words, one becomes empowered to do something beyond one's own capacity. One who becomes a little successful in spiritual life. One of the anartas that one needs to address is labha, puja, and pratishta. Oh, now I've achieved something. Now I'm getting some respect. I'm getting some honor. I'm getting some praise. I'm successful in spiritual life. Pride. Taranga rangani. One tries to be the enjoyer of the little waves of spiritual happiness. There's a contamination. So a devotee understands that. So in the beginning stages, yes, that may happen. But I immediately responded, no. In favor of, so it's initially, it's a factor of intelligence. The intelligence makes a strong yes over here, which immediately gives a strong no over there. But that's just intelligence. It's a spiritual intelligence. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyantite. It's awarded to persons who tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. The Dami Bodhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives the intelligence yes, which means no, to be the enjoyer. Yes, with love and great affection, serve Krishna. Krishna will supply that intelligence. The Dami. Krishna gives it unto those who, tesham, satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. And if we're doing externally only, like accepting Krishna consciousness on the mental plane, it's not from the heart. As soon as the opportunity for enjoyment comes, hey, Krishna must want me to enjoy. No. Krishna wants your love and your devotion. Not because he's needy, because he's compassionate. It's the rescue from this drowning position in material existence. So no. Yes, to the other side. That's Buddha Yoga. Right? Vyavasayatmika bodhi ekeha kurunandana. That's Bodhi Yoga. Krishna Eka Sharana. That's Buddha Yoga. Eka. Shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. That's it. Yeah? Well, what happens when a child walks and learning to walk and takes his fill? They cry. They get back up and they start walking again. That's the path of bhakti. The propensity for pure love for Krishna is there. Just as walking propensity is there. It's natural when there's a loving parent that helps the child learn to walk. It's natural when there's a loving teacher that helps the aspiring spiritualist to learn pure devotional service. We take a little spill, we get back up again. However many times, we get back up again. However far away we may go, we get back up again. Under the guidance and loving care of those who are training and guiding us in Krishna consciousness. Yes. Microphone.
I just want one clarification. Just now, this question, regarding this question, what I understood is that when this kind of stage comes, when one is thinking like lava, puja, prasthishtha, or one is getting some empowerment from Krishna, one becomes pride. So what I understood is that is it that one should control the mind by intelligence, although the desire is there, but by intelligence taking shelter, even if the mind is rebelling or something.
Yeah. You invoke a little intelligence and say, my dear mind, just like Raghunath Das Goswami in his Mana Shiksha, my dear mind, please. With your intelligence, you give instructions to the mind.
But there is a feeling that why these kind of things are coming in mind, that is itself very discouraging.
No. It's not just... We've been in this material world. The reality is we've been in this material world so many lifetimes we can't even count them all. The reality is we've been misusing our free will consistently for millions and millions and millions of lifetimes. We have a responsibility to pay for that misuse of free will. We're paying our dues. You borrow money, you got to pay it back, right? That's responsible life. You have a debt, you pay it back. Correct? I mean, in material life, you accept some money from another person, you're committed to pay it back, whatever it takes. We have to pay our... take responsibility for our misuse of free will, and it's not discouraging that we have to do so. It's responsible that we have to do so. Take the mode of goodness side, not the mode of ignorance side. Oh, why do I have to pay this back? Amnesty. No, be responsible. If my mind keeps degrading to the position of wanting to be the enjoyer, this is because of so many lifetimes and so many misuses, conscious acts of misuse of free will. And now you're a devotee. And still, conscious acts of misuse of free will. Oh, but it's due to the residual effect of so many lifetimes. It's a very similar question to what Navayovan is asking, just from a different perspective. It's very complicated. This network of material desires was his same. This is what you're saying. That's the consequence of misuse of free will. Let me understand that deeply. Let me not misuse free will any further. And even when I make that determination, I find that I misuse free will again. Sometimes just by inattention, sometimes willfully. This is the residual effect of past involvement in material existence since time immemorial. It's not going to just get up and go away. Maya is not going to let you out of jail just because you want out of jail. You got to prove that you're going to be a good citizen if she lets you out of jail. Okay, I'm ready. You invest consciousness in that which you know will lead to the spiritual destination. Don't invest consciousness in lamenting, despondency, discouragement, lamentation, mode of ignorance. No. Yes. Say a strong enough yes over here, the no becomes easy.
So what then?
That's the same as the second question he asked also. Which is our responsibility? The primary responsibility is yes to Krishna. Following behind that yes is a polite no thank you. Not angry, not despondent, no despair, no lamentation. It's unfortunate. I feel deep regret that I misused my free will for countless numbers of lifetimes. I feel great regret for that. I'm not going to dwell over there. I'm going to dwell over here. Because I have strong faith in Krishna's kindness and his love. And those loving associates of his that want to take us to him. Let me go with him. This other master, the mind of chronic complaining, that's not going to take me to a good place. That will take me to a good place. I choose there. And that will take care of this over here. The petty weakness of heart.
The point of what understood is whatever comes to whatever kind of things comes, neglecting them, fixing ourselves in the instructions and bring enthusiasm.
Yes. And essential in that is the loving relationship itself. Not just the instructions, but the loving relationship itself. I want that loving relationship. The instructions are a subset of that loving relationship, not the instructions are the relationship. I do the do's and avoid the don'ts and that's it. I'm a machine. It's a plus or a minus, a plus or a zero. And I just respond to the pluses and reject the zeros. It's not mechanical, it's a relationship. When the relationship is there, the pluses and the zeros will be there. The behaviors will be there. We want the relationship with Krishna. And that's accessed through those who represent Krishna. That's a natural arrangement. That's how it works. It's Krishna's loving network. So yes, instructions. But submission to the person, into the relationship with the person. That's what we want. Then the yeses are easy. And the noes are easy. And without that, it's a struggle. Called the mind. The binary processor. Who wants to question? Yes, pass the microphone.
Maharaj, how to cultivate positive desires at the same time, how to avoid negative desires?
Say it again. I didn't catch it.
How to cultivate positive desires.
Positive desires.
That conducive to Krishna consciousness. And at the same time.
Conducive to Krishna consciousness at the same time.
At the same time, how to avoid negative desires?
Well, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. You know that verse? Yes? That means yes or no? No. Okay. It's Rupa Goswami, it's Lord Chaitanya's discussion with, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, with I believe Rupa Goswami, the process of surrender. The makeup, so here's surrender, here's a ball of surrender. What does it look like? Accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable. The essence is surrender. When you have someone that you have great affection for, and they say, could you please turn on the fan or turn off the fan, turn on the light or turn off the light, when you something, you know, the behavior is there, identified, the do and the do not. When you have attachment for the person, is there any difficulty in the behavior? No. Surrender. So, then there are things that can enhance one's surrender. Humility. Another important part of surrender. If one thinks oneself big, then you come before someone who you're supposed to surrender to, like Krishna. Why should I surrender to Krishna? Therefore, one of the trainings that we have is when we come before the altar, we pay our obeisances. And not like, you know, a big person that comes before a deity and goes like this, or, you know, they may bow, go like this, but to go like that, we're trained, we pay our dandavats. And you, etc. Humility. And then, you know, can go on. The whole process of Krishna consciousness, the training of the message of Bhagavad Gita and the activities that we perform. They enhance our Krishna consciousness, but they're not the essence of our Krishna consciousness. The essence of our Krishna consciousness is surrender to Krishna. When you're feeling very surrendered, it's very easy to do things you may not otherwise like to do, or to not do things you might otherwise like to do. Yeah? Yes.
As you said, technology is very enamoring, that this thing that we see that it is going on developing.
Sure. And it will continue at an increasing rate.
And this is like, sometimes we see like people using all the technologies and all that. That how to guard against that getting distracted by these things. We get to see it everywhere, that how to guard against that. The tendency is there to, like, already desire it. I mean,
desires are there in the heart, that how to guard against getting attracted by
there them. Are such desires, how to guard against such desires.
Yes.
Knowledge, understand the shallowness, the superficiality, the dead end with a big bully, the other end of the dead end alley, ready to beat you up. That's what's waiting down that alley. A decadent society where values are gone, culture is gone, crassness predominates, viciousness. I mean, go down that alley, that's what's waiting. That's knowledge. And but that's limited, because even still one may be attracted. Knowledge alone is not enough. So try simultaneously. I mean, just a little note on what I just said. Srila Prabhupada instructed that one of the primary duties of a spiritual master is to train the disciple in such a way that they understand the futility of material life. It's right in Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit. He's about to die. He's not like thinking, hey, party time. But it's detachment. And why? And clearly understand those messages. Why? The forest of material enjoyment chapter in the Bhagavatam is very revealing. Fourth canto. But more simultaneously and more important is the connecting medium with the spiritual world. So just like I was giving you this example of the research scientist saying, I know what is the happiness of a research scientist, but there's a happiness that I don't have, and I see that in all of you. Experience even one drop of that happiness. It takes away the attraction of so-called material enjoyment. Make your spiritual connection strong. And to make your spiritual connection strong, make sure you have your ABCs in good order. Like, what are the fundamental, foundational, core, essential components of tasting spiritual happiness? Just keep track of those things and nurture those things. Then you'll have a genuine taste, and that little drop of that genuine taste will be protection. Say the same, give a practical example of the same thing. Prabhupada would often say, look at my Western disciples. Their whole lives were made up of chasing after material enjoyment. And now, through the practice of Krishna consciousness, they've completely given that up. How is it possible? They must be experiencing something. Because if they weren't experiencing something, they'd be continuing to do those same things. But they're not doing those same things. It's protection comes from spiritual taste. Find happiness in the association with devotees, and that will protect one from the apparent attraction of becoming a research scientist, and the happiness of a research scientist, and enjoying the bounties that research creates. Research and technology. Now, from that position of happiness, one may use those things. Sometimes Prabhupada would be challenged by materialists. You're using the products of material technology. And Prabhupada's reply is, we're using them, but we're not entangled in them. If they stopped, like, you know, hit a wall, stopped. Like, you know, the petroleum runs out. The devotees are not going to be, you know, flipped out. We can use those things, and if they're not there, we can do without those things. And that's how Prabhupada trained us. We should be completely satisfied with simple living. At the same time, we can step and be completely satisfied. At the same time, we can step into the complexity of material life and not be agitated. We can use those things in service to Krishna, just like Bhishma Dev. And when the signal comes, Krishna doesn't want this anymore, walk away from it. Use it, but not be controlled by it. And that's a delicate balance. It depends very much on one's core internal Krishna consciousness. Therefore, especially in the beginning, keep it simple. Real simple. And when you're, you know, developing your, so those who are students, developing your career, you're obliged to get involved in, you know, complexity. Because that's what it's all about. Just get real good at complexity. Figuring it out, the push and pull of material complexity, and then you got a job. Technology. Wiggle this over here, that makes that move over there, and you know how to do it. You got a job. If something gets in the way and you wiggle over here, it doesn't wiggle over there, you know how to fix the problem. You got a better job. Unfortunately, Prabhupada explains, that kind of training is training people to be sudras. And sudra is very dependent upon their master. And masters are not often very kind. They're often very cruel. It's a nasty environment. So it's nice to have a career that's simple. But in this complex world, it's not always like that. So we can do those things in service to Krishna, and not more than that. Not, I want to be the best because it satisfies my ego to be the best. But according to necessity, and if there is some recognition for being good at something, it's just how to utilize that recognition in service to Krishna. Not, oh, it's tricky business. You go into a land of minefields, you have to be very careful. Because one can explode and you're finished. Be very careful. But the satisfaction of not being in the minefield, but being in a life of simplicity, that also needs to be cultivated. That's where the core spiritual activities of our Krishna conscious life give us real satisfaction. In the company of the devotees and serving the devotees that we're in the company of. When that satisfaction is there, the attraction for the glitter gold of plastic life I don't look at that as happiness. I feel great compassion for those who are immersed and think that that's happiness. I'd like to give them an opportunity to experience something else. And that's a challenge because generally persons that are immersed in that, that's all in all. Not open to hear anything other. Okay, I think we'll end there. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.